You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's Wednesday, so Christopher Mad Dog Russo in the house looking dapper.
Do you like the jacket?
I like the hair.
The jacket is pretty good.
The hair.
Stephen A. Bellamy!
There's a lot.
How is this jacket?
The jacket.
Give Jeannie Russo credit doing all the wardrobe shopping.
You know, I love it.
She's done a good job.
She's the real MVP.
Oh, absolutely.
She is the real MVP, and I love me some Jeannie Russo, but the bottom line is that the tie was not working.
She was very annoyed by that. She thought the tie worked perfectly last week. She said Stephen A. was dead wrong. That's a quote. That's a quote.
You know what? But you saw what she did today, right?
A little better.
So she's listening. She's listening.
You guys literally have matching ties on today, so I better not hear anything.
Well, it's not. Actually, it's a little bit different in terms of material, but I understand.
And I saw his outfit on the NBA there. What was it, Friday? He made sure he texted me. He says, watch what I'm watching wearing tonight.
What?
I gave him the heads up.
Could you handle it?
I was funny. I made sure I watched it, though.
Goodness.
I made sure I took a look at it.
You do understand I was featured in GQ. You do know.
Oh, did you?
That did happen.
All right.
Okay. We can move on.
So this is a lot of compliments at 10:02:20. I can't keep them counting. All right. Speaking of fabric cut from a different cloth, that would be Steph Curry. My goodness. Has almost all the accolades. Obviously, a future Hall of Famer, 8-time All-Star, 2-time MVP, 2-time scoring champ. I can go on, 3-time champion. But he has an opportunity, gentlemen, to catapult himself to an even higher echelon. We got to look back before we can go forward. Here's how he's fared in the finals thus far. Curry's finals production has been eerily similar with or without KD on the floor. But when both played in finals games together, they held a 9-1 record. Curry has shot 38% from downtown in games with and without Kevin Durant. Mad Dog, how would a loss impact at how we look at Curry's overall career?
This is a very important series from that standpoint. The stats do not indicate Game 7 against Cleveland, the year the Cavs beat him, where he was awful, shooting threes and turning the ball over and was outplayed by Kyrie Irving. Somehow that's not in there, where he was not good in a big game and could not get his team home up 3-1 in that series with two home games. Let's not forget that before we sit there and put Curry on his high class, as I think my little buddy over here might do here momentarily. Here's the thing about Curry. He's won 3 titles, okay? The first title that he won, if you care about MVPs in the NBA Finals, he wasn't. They beat Cleveland in 6 games. Cavs had no Kyrie, no Kevin Love. And if you want to go look at the Cavalier lineup in Game 6, Stephen A. and I could have started. I mean, Dellavedova, I mean, that was as bad as you ever going to say. It was a horrendous team that LeBron took to a Game 6. The other 2 finals, Durant was the better player. All right? So to me, and then he lost a horrendous loss when the Cavs beat him. So to me, from that standpoint, this is a very significant series here against the Celtics.
Well, first of all, a couple of things. I mean, I love how you point certain things out. First of all, the year Andre Iguodala won the MVP, that could have easily gone to Steph Curry. A lot of people thought he deserved it. But Andre Iguodala was so pivotal in key moments, particularly defensively, that you had to give him some love. Plus, he hit a lot of big-time shots because he was wide open because they were teaming up on Curry. But I would remind you that Curry played lights out in that NBA Finals, the first one that they won against that suspect lineup that you pointed out. Fair enough. When he goes against LeBron James and them, when they lost the 3-1 lead, he was awful in the last 3 games. He was shooting, I mean, horrifically compared to what we're accustomed to seeing him. Plus, he had like 7 assists and 12 turnovers over the course of those last 3 games. So definitely he has to be indicted for that. But I recall Magic Johnson once being called Tragic Johnson because Magic Johnson struggled in the postseason in the finals against the Boston Celtics. Remember when Dennis Johnson stripped him? You remember when he turned the ball over on 3 separate occasions, okay? And they lost that NBA Finals again. Game 7 to the Boston Celtics, but they came back and won. I love how we remember what Magic Johnson went through and what he overcame, but we want to forget what Steph Curry overcame. Now, granted, Kevin Durant arrived there, and we understand it. Well, why did Kevin Durant arrive there? Because LeBron had a healthy Kyrie Irving. LeBron had a healthy Kevin Love. And obviously, before that, he was in Miami and he had assembled with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh and all of this other stuff. And Kevin Durant was like, well, why can't I do that? Now, I didn't like the move to Golden State because they had just beaten them three. Yeah, they had just overcome a 3-1 lead and beaten Oklahoma City Thunder. So 30 days later, you go to that team that beat you. I didn't have any respect for that at all. But outside of that, there is no denying that Kevin Durant is one of the elite talents the game has ever seen. And Kevin and Steph Curry not being better than Kevin Durant is no shade. People want to act like that. But if you look at Steph Curry's career numbers, he's averaging over 25, 6, and 5 in the NBA playoffs throughout his career. This is a guy, and you know, people treat him like he just falls off the map and suddenly forgets how to play. No, he still balls. It's just that he had to be a bit deferential in terms of his talent. It's one of the greatest offensive players this game has ever seen. And you could bring up Bird, you could bring up Magic, you could bring up Jordan, you could bring up the very, very best that has ever existed in NBA history. Kevin Durant as an offensive player is in that conversation because that is how lethal he is. So let's pump the brakes a little bit on being critical of Steph Curry and instead recognize the fact that he just, it's no crime in not being Kevin Durant. 6'11 with a 7'6 wingspan that can shoot from threes, got a mid-range game that's lethal, can finish in the open court, can score, can generate, you know, can register an 88% free throw shooting. This is Kevin freaking Durant that we're talking about here. Let's respect that. When we're talking about Steph Curry.
Listen, I'm with you about Durant, but Stephen conveniently forgot that before Magic collapsed against the Celtics in 84, he scored 40-something points with millions of assists in game six against Philly when he was a rookie and won a championship and Kareem didn't play.
I did not forget about that. Are you going to forget that he was going against Caldwell Jones? Daryl Dawkins, who by the time, let's go from an historical perspective. You know this. Daryl Dawkins, God rest his soul, was a walking foul. The man breathed.
Not great.
I mean,
underachiever.
The number one thing happen that Daryl Dawkins couldn't stay in a game for 10 minutes at a time to save his life. He'd pick up 6 fouls in that period of time. That too, Magic Johnson was going up against. That and Caldwell Jones, who nobody's writing home about. So stop it.
Well, he also won another championship against Philly. So you're killing Magic for 1984.
I'm not killing Magic.
He only won 2 titles.
Don't you dare say I'm killing Magic.
You're putting him with Curry. That's ridiculous.
Magic Johnson's going to be working with us tomorrow night at the Chase Center. Don't you act like I'm killing Magic Johnson. I'm
watching.
Doing no such thing. And he's watching now. I got to be careful.
And he was awful.
I say about
the bar of soap, him and Cooper taking showers after they lost game 7 against Boston. He was awful.
Well,
I'm with you. He was so upset because, in fact, they were. But you seem to forget. Hold on now. Magic won the 2. Plus, he won in college. So to sit there and even say, well, hold on now. Magic had a bad series, Curry had a bad series.
Magic
had won 3 times already.
But Magic was a champion, and Steph Curry was a champion before the 3-1 lead was lost. He was a champion already. He won the title
against
first.
The team that you and I could have played for.
It was still LeBron James on that team, number one. Number two, Golden State was young. It was their first time in the finals. They'd never been there before. So Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, we didn't know what they were capable of. We didn't know they were going to be who they are. We didn't know this at the time. They were puppies, okay? That was their first time in that kind of atmosphere. And they handled their business.
Dellavedova, Shumpert, Tristan Thompson, and Mozgov. I can get the guys the big key shot and Jay Williams at 5 o'clock this afternoon.
You get no credit for it. How about the credit to get to the finals before you actually won it? Let's not forget that, okay? This is a championship that we're talking about here. And all I'm trying to say to you is this. When you look at it from the standpoint of Steph Curry and them getting there for the first time, he was a champion, and then they lost the 3-1 lead, okay, to LeBron and a Cleveland Cavaliers squad that was fully loaded. And then after that, because he played 73 games, they were trying to break the all-time record. They were doing all of that other stuff, and they exhausted themselves, and they came back to bite Steph Curry because he wasn't 100% healthy, which you know.
So now we have excuses now.
It's facts.
Here's the facts. I am tired of these players making excuses in any sport. Here's what it comes down to.
Go ahead.
If you're injured, don't play. If you play, you're not injured. I can't listen to this idea. Well, he was banged up, so he got. I'm not interested. Bird played with a broken wrist against the Lakers in 85. I can't listen to this.
Time out. I was listening to you do your radio show a couple of years ago, and I think if I remember correctly, you had a really, really bad cold, and your voice was a little bit hoarse, and you didn't sound like the Mad Dog. You understand what I'm saying? Ah,
good afternoon, everybody.
I didn't give you a good voice.
You couldn't do any of that stuff because your voice was a little hoarse. Now, you showed up to work. But you weren't yourself.
But I still got the content I needed.
You weren't yourself.
I still got the information I needed.
You got the information, but you didn't get doggy. I mean, you didn't get Mad Dog Russo that day. You got doggy. You understand? But you, I mean, you got Mad Dog Russo, but you didn't get doggy, okay?
What about his sentiment, though, about the injured, that whole
listen,
quote?
Listen, I get tired of it as well. Don't get me wrong. I understand it to a point. All I'm trying to say is it wasn't like Steph Curry didn't play. He played. He showed up. But he wasn't 100% healthy, and we understand that. And then, by the way, the two NBA finals, one of those NBA finals, you had some people thinking that Steph Curry should have been the MVP instead of Kevin Durant. Now, I was a guy that
thought said that.
There were several people that were saying that because Steph Curry was balling during those NBA finals with Steph Curry. It's just that Kevin Durant, bottom line is, this brother was
lethal. Oh, he's great. He's the best player on the team. I understand.
Okay. Let's get to the game. Right. Game one tomorrow night, 9 Eastern. You said Magic's going to be a part of the broadcast.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to be in San Francisco.
He's supposed to show up. I don't want him to be scared.
He's going to show up.
Because sitting next to me knowing that he got to debate me, I mean, be
okay,
a problem.
Okay, settle down.
You know what I'm saying?
All right. The Warriors hope the odds stay in their favor in their quest for a 7th NBA title. The team split the regular season series at 1-1. This is the second ever finals meeting between these two in the first since 19. I put this in for you because I know you like history. Since 1964, it did happen. Celtics 1-5. Then you probably already
Wilt
knew
was
that.
In, Wilt Here played for go. San Francisco.
Here
that was
go.
The year where Wilt was with and with yes. the Warriors.
I see. I knew it.
You and look, Russell beat him.
What are you, a walking encyclopedia?
Well, that's an easy one.
Okay. Let's get to it though. Who do you? Because I don't know this. Who do you have winning the series?
Well, first off, the Warriors deservedly so are a favorite. Okay. They have the home court. They're great in that building. I think the Celtics might be plus 140. So mm-hmm. if you put $100 on the Celtics and they win, you win $140, which I think that's a solid underdog. It's not overwhelming,
yeah.
but that's a significant underdog. And I think you have to make Golden State your favorite. I'm not sure who Mr. It's not a pick'em series if mm-hmm. you think it's that.
Right.
Golden State's a legit favorite.
Well,
in
when you're talking about me in basketball, you can say Stephen Naismith. That works. Stephen Naismith works, yeah. but you can do that.
Sometimes people make up their own nickname, you know. Usually other people do it.
You're pretty good at this.
We can, you know.
You're not bad.
You can go with that. You can go with that.
You
go
give
go
me ahead. Compliments, I'll give you one. You're not bad. I will take the Celtics
Come on,
here.
Get me out
I'm going to take the Celtics to win in 6 games. Can I give you the reasons?
Sure.
I'd love the reason.
Want to hear the reason?
Sure, I mean, please.
Yeah.
We've got like 50 more.
I did not like the way they finished against Miami. All right, they were awful
Agreed.
In game 6, and they were waiting to lose in game 7. And I have no problem with Butler taking that 3, by the way.
Okay.
I have major issues with the way they finished. But I think the Celtics, with their size, mm-hmm. with their defense, I think they're going to be a little loosier-goosier in this series because the pressure, to me, is more on Curry and Golden State to win that championship that they haven't won in a couple of years. I think the layoff is perfect. They go from Sunday night to Thursday night. It's not the next day, like, say, the Rangers are going to have to do in the hockey.
Yeah.
Right.
They get to 3 days, which to me is outstanding. And I think the fact that, the Celtics beat the Nets, who had Durant and Curry, beat Milwaukee, the defending champions, albeit no Middleton. They still won a series in 7 games. Mm-hmm. They won 3 road games in Miami, a gritty, hard-nosed, tough ball club. I think they're a little better battle-tested. Golden State, they beat Denver without Murray. They beat Morant, who missed the layup in game 1 and didn't play the last couple games of that series and had to work hard to beat Memphis. And they got the break of all time, in my eyes, that Dallas did their dirty work by beating Phoenix. So from that standpoint, I am going to take the Celtics. Now, the problem with taking the Celtics, you can't take them in the 7th game. I know they won a 7th game in Miami. I get that. You can't think they're going to win it. Now, Curry's lost game 7s at home. We saw it. Cleveland. But I can't take Boston to 7 games. So I'm going to have to be because I don't like them on a road scenario there.
They've been good on the road, though.
I know, but that arena, a little tricky. I will say, to make it fair, a fair prediction,
right.
I will say Stevie will be on a plane back to New York on, let's see, what's the date on that? On Friday morning, June 16th, Boston in 6.
I get where you're coming from. And by the way, you brought up the Chase Center. I haven't been there. I'm going.
Oh, everybody loves it.
Oh,
you have a good time.
This is my first
it's
time ever.
It's supposed to be beautiful.
Well, I liked Oakland, though. I'm being given a tour of the building.
Oh, really?
You know, oh, let me guess.
When I get
this. Was Kerr giving it to you before?
I'll be giving it to you.
Are they
going to
carry you out of the throne and feed you grapes?
I'm just saying. You know, they're gonna give me a tour of the Chase Center. I'm looking forward to this. It's been a while. I haven't been there, and I love that crowd. Having said all of that, let me say this to you, Doggy. I think this is a pick'em series. I think this is that close. I don't think that anybody can definitively say that Boston can't beat this Golden State Warriors team. They're bigger. They're more physical. They have rim protection. They have size at every position outside of Smart. And although Smart doesn't have that size in terms of height, he's bulky enough, no question. He's a pit bull, and he's the reigning defensive player of the year. He really, really gives it to you. And by the way, he's the one that hurt Curry, diving for the loose ball and diving on his leg and what have you. So let's keep that in mind. And the reason I bring that up is because you never know how that works in the mind's eye when you have somebody who plays with reckless abandon and really goes all out. You know, when you're going up against somebody like that, particularly when you've gotten hurt before, it might give you cause to pause when it goes to getting that extra loose ball or anything like that. So you got to take that into consideration and consider how that's going to be mindful. I went back and watched the tape of Boston versus Golden State in the regular season when Boston lost in Boston to Golden State. And I saw some of the plays, the denial of the basketball of Steph Curry, their willingness to double team, the drawing offensive fouls. They do things that other teams in the Western Conference did not do against Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors this year. So I look at it from that standpoint, the fact that they have two scorers, Boston is formidable. I'm just of the mindset that I'm always going to flow with the shooters. When you're a marksman, that ultimately is the difference. And I think the combination of Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Jordan Poole is a huge factor. If they didn't have a Jordan Poole, meaning that third wheel that could give you some offense, I would feel differently. I would pick Boston to win the series. But the fact that you've got those three, and you've got a guy like Andrew Wiggins and Kuminga, even though they're young, but they both got size and height on them to match a Tatum and a Jaylen Brown defensively, I think that's something that we can't ignore. I think ultimately Golden State, I'm going with them in seven. I think this series goes seven back at the Chase Center. Yep. This is a one game seven. Even though Boston's 7-2 on the road, I don't think they win that game seven on the road either. I think it goes seven. I think Golden State wins it in seven.
Warriors in seven, Boston in six. Before we go, Bill Russell's 1964 final stat line, do you know it?
I'm going to say 19 rebounds and 19 points, 28 rebounds.
11, 25, and 5. I expect better from you.
More than he wasn't a great scorer, Russell. He scored when he had a score. Yeah. And remember, they beat them. Philadelphia beat them 2 years later in the final when the Sixers, because they beat Barry and Nate Thurman.
That's right.
So San Francisco lost those two in a 3 year period there.
All right.
You care.
He's right.
I do care. I'm going to keep testing you.
And you know what my favorite all-time team is?
What?
The 75 Warriors who beat Washington in four straight because I love Rick Barry. Al Otto's played all those guys. It was before you were born.
No,
but he played all those guys.
But I got you. Yes, I'm aware about Barry.
I love that.
75 Warriors. Okay.
75.
This is about to be a lot because now I'm going to have Stephen Naismith, Mad Dog, and the Mouth of the South. But that's what we're about to do. Some college football to get to. SEC spring meetings. Nick Saban again said he regrets singling out Texas A&M when discussing his issues with how teams are using NIL rules to help shape rosters. Saban, however, defended his comments in which he claimed Aggies coach Jimbo Fisher bought every player by saying this on Tuesday. Take a listen.
I didn't really say that anybody did anything wrong.
You said they bought their recruiting class.
I didn't say anybody did anything wrong, okay? And I've said everything I'm going to say about this. And I should have never mentioned any individual institutions. I said that before.
Jimbo lying when he says that they didn't do anything?
I have no problem with Jimbo. I have no problem with Jimbo at all.
There he is, the one and only Paul Feinbaum. Paul, so great to see you. Before we get started, Paul, this is what I need to know. I understand you're in Destin, Florida. I've never been there, and I've heard incredible things. Is it really that beautiful? Because it looks it.
Molly, the beaches are the best in the world. Come on down. I want you to bring Stephen A. Leave that other interloper home, though, okay?
Oh, disrespectful. It does look gorgeous, though.
It looks gorgeous. Have you ever been to Destin? No, I have not. It looks gorgeous, but I will say this. I am a West Indian man, you know. Oh. I'm from the islands, all right? Me and my family from the islands. Well, St. Thomas, St. Croix, Antigua.
Yeah.
As beautiful as that looks, it don't look better than St. Thomas.
No, for sure.
Let me be very clear.
Yeah.
We can move on.
Okay. Paul, I'm going to start with you. Who do you think looks worse here? And I can't wait to hear you on this. Is it Saban or is it Jimbo?
Well, it's Jimbo because Saban made a mistake. He said something that he probably had said privately, and I bet Stephen A. Smith knows what I'm talking about here, but he didn't intend to publicly embarrass anyone. That's not Nick Saban's way. He has never done that before in his entire career. And I think he's fed up. I think he's frustrated with the way this name, image, and likeness is going. And so he said it. What he said is accurate, but in the parlance of today's college sports world, it's not a big deal because players are making money. What Jimbo Fisher did was go scorched earth. He got very personal. He used the word despicable in describing Nick Saban 15 times. Now, that's not a lot for Mad Dog, to use it in a single paragraph, but it's a lot for a football coach. And ultimately, he created this just, towering inferno with his response. He got very direct with Saban, talked about he's the opposite of what I want to be. He made fun of the position as the czar of college football. He's even used words like Saban, is godlike, and people that have worked for him know differently, insinuating personal character flaws, which I've never heard anybody mention. So, I mean, it was really one of the most extraordinary press conferences I've ever heard. He went DEFCON 1. He did not speak yesterday, Molly. He is speaking this afternoon. What he says will be watched very, very closely.
Go ahead, Dougie.
Oh, well, listen, I'm with Paul. I love Paul. I listen to him all the time. He knows the SEC a lot better than I do. Here's what I'm going to say. I'm down on the both of them myself. I don't want to listen to Jimbo Fisher, all right? That was not the best way he left Florida State. We know that. He did not distinguish himself. That's the nicest way to say it with the Jameis Winston scenario. They did not have a lot of these top recruits until this whole thing with the NIL came from. He was too loud, which indicates to me that he was very defensive, that maybe Saban hit a nerve here, which is an indication that something's going on. And let's call it like we see it. Jimbo Fisher is not a patch on the fanny of Saban when it comes to college football. I mean, let's call it like we say it. Listen, I think Saban moaning and groaning, I don't want to hear that either. He has gotten they had 37 players. Is it 37, Paul, from the 2017 team that played in the NFL? Yeah. 37 guys. And he wins a championship every year, and then he gets the top draft picks in the world because everybody wants to go to Alabama. So Nick moaning and groaning about recruiting is a little rough to take. Let's call it like it. See, it's a little. This is a guy who's won 7 championships. Can you calm down? Figure it out. I mean, picking on him is absurd. But I'm down on the both of them, but I'm more down on Fisher myself.
I'm a side with you more so than Paul on this in terms of being down with both of them, down on both of them. Here's where I would be critical of Nick Saban. And that's hard for me to do because he's my favorite college football coach. I love him to death. He's invited me down to speak to his program.
Did you go, by the way?
Twice.
Good for you.
In the interest of full disclosure, I've spoken to his program. Obviously, I've done it for Dabo Sweeney as well. I had to do a mea culpa there because I picked Alabama to beat him, and they beat Alabama in the national championship. That's a different subject for another day.
Let me get in. He was told it was the best speech ever, too.
What?
I'll say it for him. Well,
he's good at that.
It was.
I can't get Saban on the radio when he's doing public speeches for
anyone that went down to Alabama.
I just respect Nick Saban so much because I think he provides a template for what you can expect as a kid once you go into the real world. Mm-hmm. And I so appreciate that because as hard-nosed as he is, he prepares the guys to let them know the world doesn't like you. The world wants what they can get from you. And if you don't provide something to them, if you're not an asset, you're a liability. And if you're a liability, you're going to be gone. I don't think there's a college football program in America that teaches that better than Nick Saban football. So that's why I'm such a strong supporter of his, because it extends beyond the playing field. But Nick Saban knows better. And what I mean by that is when you said the programs, you knew that what that was going to connotate. Now, he was right with what he said yesterday. He didn't say they did anything illegal because with name, image, likeness, obviously, if they did, quote unquote, buy every player, and obviously he was hyperbolic when he was saying that. But if that was the case, it's not illegal in today's college football because of the NIL issue. So from a technical, from a literal perspective, he wasn't wrong in terms of when he said, I didn't say they did anything wrong. But why would you isolate an individual program? Why would you bring up Texas A&M? Why would you bring up Deion Sanders primetime at Jackson State? Why would you do that? You have to know that there's going to be some fallout from that. Nick Saban has been around too long not to know better. Now, Paul is absolutely right about this. Nick Saban is incredibly frustrated with the whole NIL issue. It's driving him nuts. And he's not alone. On numerous, I've spoken to numerous college football and college basketball coaches. And what they believe is transpiring is that they're being extorted as programs because these guys are not allowed now allowed to go get agents. And as a result, they could come to you and say, look, what are you going to give me? Because this other program is saying they can get this from me outside of the program. I can go and get marketing deals. I can get this. I can get that. And as a result, you're using agents to extort college football programs. So Nick Saban's frustration, Paul, and correct me if I'm speaking out of turn, what I deduced from what he expressed is that, damn it, why aren't more of y'all speaking up about this? Because this is going to ruin college football. Why am I the one standing? And he's not standing alone. Kirby Smart and others feel the same way. I ran into Kirby Smart, who actually asked me to bring him on to talk about this subject. He's not running from it. But the point is, Nick Saban's one of those dudes that's fiery. And when he feels like people are not standing up to address an issue with the fervor that it deserves, that frustrates him. And I think he let that get the best of him with what
Paul,
he said.
Before you jump in, I have a question. Are these NIL rules also leveling the playing field for recruiting? And is that why he's frustrated? Because then he's not just going to get all the top guys anymore. And these other programs, lesser programs, have a chance.
Molly, that's exactly what it is. And I think that's at the root of what frustrates Nick Saban. He controlled the sport for so long. You guys have talked about it. He's won 7 national championships. Alabama wins a national championship every other year. And it's not as easy for him because most players were going to Alabama for the reasons Stephen A. laid out. It's the creme de la creme. They put more people in the NFL than literally everyone until this year with when Georgia had 15 players drafted. And Saban has been at the epicenter of that. That's more difficult. And people bring up his age. He'll be 71 in October. It's not his age. He's the same coach he's always been. But Saban knows there's not a lot of runway left for him. So every time he loses a player, and I was told recently that there was a player on the market that the going price was $3 million. And guys like Nick Saban are not going to participate. If I could detour, Molly, with your indulgence, I have to say something back to what Mad Dog said a minute ago,
please,
if I could. I'm not patronizing the guy because he is eminently successful, and it's an honor for me to have met him. But I heard Mad Dog. I heard Chris Mad Dog Russo say something a minute ago, Stephen A. He talked about the way that Jimbo Fisher left Florida State. Mad Dog, you of all people, you destroyed the single greatest sports talk show team in the history of mankind for personal gain, for your own ego, for your self-absorbed dreams of having your name on a network. You broke a man's heart in Mike Francesca. The guy has been like, is selling pencils on Third Avenue since you cast him out. So I can't sit here in good conscience and listen to you talk about someone else when you're at the root of the worst breakup in entertainment history. I mean, at least since the Beatles, I should say.
Well, that's a little strong. Number one, I was there for 19 years, to be fair. Fisher wasn't there at 19 years. But Jimbo, pipe down. Well, why are you responding so much to Nick? And Saban's had the cream of the crop for so long in Alabama, and now we got a big issue with it? Nick, deal with it. You get all the great players. You don't have to worry about it so much. I was a little surprised. And the average fan doesn't care. Does the average fan care where these kids are going to school?
Well, let me say this to both of you, and I'm surprised that I'm the one that has to bring this up to my two elder statesmen. I don't get it, but I'll try. Nick Saban, what I got from him was a guy that's frustrated that his brethren, his contemporaries, aren't as gung-ho against NIL and the impact that it's having on college football as he is. That's what, I mean, it's a, to me, that's an entirely different thing. Yeah, he's approaching 71 years of age. The runway is not as long. I get what you're saying, Paul. But we also know that a guy like Nick Saban appreciates competition. I don't think he's averse to that. What he doesn't want is people coming in and extorting college football programs. Now, we don't care because we believe programs have, you know, basically extorted players for far too long.
But Stephen,
but that's what they're feeling. And he's saying, my contemporaries are letting this go. Why are y'all not speaking up?
But to the earlier sentiment, Stephen A., he's not just saying that they're being extorted. What he's also getting frustrated with is now these other programs have a chance because they have another way of getting guys. So it's not extorted. It's also what I said to earlier, that it's both things can be true.
Well, let me ask you this. Hold on, Molly.
Let me just finish. That it's leveling the playing field for these other programs.
Molly, here's the problem with what you're saying.
What?
The man was just in the national title game.
Yeah.
He's got 7 rings.
Yeah.
It's not like he was outside of the playoffs looking in. And I'm here to tell you something right now. If Jameson Williams and those boys hadn't gotten hurt, all right, they would have won the national championship. I think they would have beat Georgia.
Yeah. So
let's not talk like Nick Saban is like, oh, my God, I'm sitting here ultra concerned about everyone else catching up to me. Excuse me. This is Alabama.
Stephen A., how do you think he got here? Because he's ultra competitive, and now he doesn't have the number one recruiting class for the first time.
He gets all the players, Stephen. Now he doesn't get them.
Paul Feinbaum, you know this better than me. What was Alabama when Nick Saban arrived? They were in the dirt. Nobody was thinking about them. He resurrected the program.
It was a great program until it came apart. But, he changed everything the first day. He won a national championship in 3 years. It's the most dominant run in college football history. So, yes, all of that is true. But I think Molly has had the best, if I could judge all four of us here, I think Molly has had the best argument of this group. I think ultimately, despite all the bloviating here, Nick Saban is worried because everyone is coming toward him. And I think he's particularly worried about Kirby Smart to the east. And I think he's very worried about Jimbo Fisher to the west because money now talks louder than anything else in college football. All those national championships, Stephen A., all those guys he's sending to the NFL don't matter as much because these players have their hands out. And one more thing, all this screaming and hollering by Nick Saban, it's not going to change anything because nobody can change it. The NCAA is begging Congress to bail them out. Well, and, guys, Congress has much bigger problems right now than bailing the NCAA out.
My last quick question to you. Underscore highlight that.
My last question to you. Do you think Alabama has money?
Stephen A., they have a lot of money, but they cannot match the oil wells of Texas A&M, the money that that program has. And they also don't have another thing. They don't have the desperate desire to win. They're used to winning.
Because
Alabama fans are like, what happened last year?
Yeah.
We came in second. That's unacceptable. This program owns the sport. Nick Saban does not look at a second place finish as anything other than a failure.
Let me tell you something. Their wide receivers don't get injured in the college playoff game and
win.
The national championship game.
They killed them in the SEC championship.
They win the national championship. No disrespect to Georgia. Nick Saban worried about competition. The hell is wrong with y'all?
Please.
I'm just talking about we ain't worried about competition.
You should know
Bring
that.
It on.
I'm the Mr.
Nick,
Capitalist.
This is Nick Saban.
Capitalist. Hey, Paul. So great to see you.
Seeing you, man.
Enjoy death.
Nick Saban worried about competition. Please. Nick, it's Nick Saban.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh, hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Quick takes, let's go. We witnessed one of the best rivalries in Sports Tuesday in Roland Garros. Two heavyweights as Rafa Nadal beat Novak Djokovic in a four-set quarterfinal showdown at the French. Chris, what was the significance of the win as Nadal ended Djokovic's bid for a second straight French Open win?
Well, first off, we don't know how much more Nadal's going to play. He's got foot issues. Yes. He's 36 years of age. He lost to Djokovic last year in a classic four-setter. To bounce back and win this match like he did in a quarterfinal because of seating issues, mm-hmm. A tremendous performance by Rafa. He should win the tournament right now, which would also give him 22 Grand Slams, yep. Two more than Djokovic.
He wins on clay. I mean, that's what he does.
Yeah, but he lost to Djokovic last year on clay. Pay attention!
I know that. That was last year. How many times did he win before?
13.
Thank you.
Yeah, this was his 14th on clay. Yep.
Thank you.
It all comes down to this, what every player hopes for every season. A shot at the NBA World Championship.
Of course you're nervous. You're supposed to be. We all have felt the nerves, but it didn't matter.
5 seconds to go. Magic with a hook shot, scores with two.
Because once you hit that court, you realize that you're home.
Jordan, Chicago.
This is what you do, and all those nerves fade. There's two different types of hunger. The hunger to win it for the first time, joining the company of legends. Then there's the hunger to make it back. Because once you taste it,
it looks so much better in person too.
You'll do anything to get it again. But no matter where your hunger comes from, you're gonna need it.
Now it's time to put a little class with a little list. So usually see Stephen A. up there, and now we say Mad Dog. That will be permanent, I promise you. All right, here are your top five story franchises in the history of professional
sports. Hold on. What's this category?
Professional dynasties. The greatest dynasties in the history of sports, pro sports.
Go ahead.
Dynasties.
Go ahead.
This is inarguable.
I'm watching. I better like what I see.
Number five are the Canadiens. Oh, they are the history of hockey. They've won 25 Stanley Cups.
You lost.
Albeit, they haven't won since 93. But go to Montreal during a postseason run. You're talking Guy Lafleur. You're talking
Guy Lafleur.
Maurice Richard. You are talking Ken Dryden. Larry Robinson. Guy Lapointe. Bob Gainey, you are talking Ivan Cournoyer.
Right.
No question about it.
Okay,
they are five.
We can do that hockey. We can do that hockey. Okay,
you got to put them. You got to show respect. You got to give them five. They are the NHL.
That better be the only hockey team on here.
Yeah, I agree with you. Now, this is the only basketball team I think we might have on here. Here is number four.
These
are the Boston Celtics. Obviously, Russell won 11 championships. Bird won three. Pierce won another one. They are. This is Cousy. This is Russell. This is obviously Havlicek. This is Bird. This is Paul Pierce. Let's put him in that category as well. This is a franchise that from 1950 to really currently today has been a dominant NBA franchise. They got 17 NBA championships. Auerbach is one of the all-time greats. You're talking Cousy, Russell, Havlicek, Sam Jones, on and on and on. Bird, Parrish, and McHale, greatest front court in history of the sport. They are number four. Number three, I probably could push this a little lower, but I'm going to put the Steelers as three only because the Steelers in the decade of the 70s were probably the best football team we've ever seen over a period of time. Won two titles, lost two, came back and won two more. All those incredible Hall of Famers, the greatest defense you're ever going to see. Bradshaw, Starworth, Franco Harris, Swan on offense. A dominant, dominant team. America's team in the 70s. Plus, they won two more after they won in the 70s. Number two, it's not even an issue. Don't even argue it. Number two is the Green Bay Packers. Curly Lambeau, it's an established team in 1920. They've won 13 NFL championships. Lombardi's the greatest coach in the history of professional football. 9-1 in the postseason. Won three championships in a row that hasn't been done since. Won the first two Super Bowls. Go check out the 62 Packers. Go check out the 66 Packers. Go check out the Ice Bowl in 67, the greatest game in the history of the NFL, when Starr went down the field 68 yards, 4:38 left, 17-14 down, in 40 degree below weather. Don't listen to him. He's lost. Green Bay is number
two. I am lost. How old are you?
I'm old enough to know that. And then number one, I mean, you can't even debate it. Now, I'm not, I wanted to put the Mets here. I can't. Number one of the Yankees.
Did you say the Mets?
I can't believe
you said the Mets.
I almost did. Almost did. Tom Seaman quite make the list. Number one's the Yankees.
Okay.
27 championships. The Bambino. Gehrig. Joe DiMaggio.
Yes.
Mickey Mantle.
Keep going.
The 98 team.
Keep going.
The current edition now.
All right.
This is
don't forget Reggie
game.
Jackson.
Reggie Jackson.
Don't forget Greg Nettles. Don't forget Chris Chambliss.
Listen,
don't forget Mickey Rivers.
100%.
Don't forget him.
Don't forget him. We agree.
Don't forget Billy Martin. Don't forget George Steinbrenner. Don't forget any of them. None of them. Give them all.
The Yankees are number one. I hate the Yankees, but it is where it's the house that Ruth built. It's the home office of Major League Baseball. 27 titles. They're worth more than any other franchise, including Dallas. The Yankees are number one. There is no debate. There is no other team you can put in there. You want me to come up with a sixth team? I might come up with the Dodgers.
No. Don't
you want to come up with a sixth?
I got a sixth. Oh, I got something to say. First of all,
yeah.
Let me say this.
Right.
You saved yourself. Because when you put the Yankees up here.
Well, you got to put the Yankees
up.
27 World Series championships. I mean, you would have been banned from television had you not had the Yankees number one.
Yeah, I agree.
So you saved yourself with that regard.
Well, what do you mean, save myself? There's nothing wrong with this list.
There's a whole bunch wrong with this list.
What's all this?
I'm not going to debate the hockey because I don't know a damn thing about
you
hockey.
You know the Canadians, the hats.
All I know is that the puck is black. Okay, it's cold, and I love me some Gary Bettman. So I'm going to do that hockey because that's my man, Gary Bettman, okay? I root for that man, great commissioner. That's the only reason. I'm not going to debate the hockey because I don't know anything
about
that.
So 1-5, you're okay.
Right. A 1-5, I'm okay. Let's get to this list here. The Packers.
Oh, come on.
Oh, stop it. Just stop it. Listen. How old are you? I thought you were in your 60s. You sure it's
62.
Not your 90s? You sure it's not your 90s? What the hell is that? I don't want to hear anything about the Packers when people just started playing football and you. I mean, come on. I'm not not trying to
they're
be.
They're an original franchise.
I know they're original. I know they're original, and I'm respecting them. But I'm talking about all-time dynasties. You won a Super Bowl with Brett Favre. You lost the second one, all right, to John Elway and Terrell Davis and those boys. Then you won one with Aaron Rodgers, which is a dick. Listen, this was in the 60s. You got two Super Bowl titles in the last 60 years. Stop it.
By
the way, I appreciate the fact that the trophy was named after him because, again.
So you need to know.
Wait a minute. Because, again, they started everything. We give them their respect. But this is about dynasties. This is about great franchises. Stop it. Get him out of there.
How can you take the? Are you kidding me?
Come on.
Oh, you're nuts. You can't take the Packers out of this.
Are you ready for this?
Yes, go ahead.
Get him out of there. I mean, you can lead. I'm a Steelers fan. And they produce, and I get all of that.
Yankees, Steelers, and Alabama. Is there a bad team that you root for? The Knicks.
Are you ready for this? The Knicks, damn it. The Knicks. Okay? But here's the deal. I would take the Steelers out of here, and I'd put Alabama. Bear Bryant, now Nick Saban. Okay?
Fair.
So I would take the Steelers out.
That's fair.
All right? Listen
fair.
To this.
I'll give
listen
you that one.
Okay?
Fair.
And number two with the Packers, the hell with that.
You're taking both the NFL. You're not going to have an NFL team in here.
Excuse me. If I would be an NFL team, I'll leave the Steelers in there if you want me to. Then I'll remove the Canadians.
No, you can't remove. Every sport's got to be represented, Steven.
Okay. Well, every sport has to be represented.
Yeah, you got to have every sport represented.
Every sport is represented.
Right.
I'm going with the Lakers.
Over who?
I want the Lakers instead of the Packers.
Oh, you're kidding me.
I want the Lakers instead of the Packers.
The Lakers already started in 1960.
Time out. The Boston Celtics have how many titles?
17.
How many times does the Lakers have?
Are you going to count the mic?
How many times do the Lakers have?
Time out.
How many times do the Lakers have?
You've been
how many championships
me.
Do the Los Angeles
Hold
Lakers
now.
Have?
You've been killing me about Mikan and Kunla forever. He won four. Now all of a sudden those titles count.
Oh, wait a minute.
Now that's not right. You've been 1950s basketball. I have been murdered on this show.
You brought him Kobe.
Plumbers. You're all that nonsense.
What?
And now all of a sudden they're going to put the Lakers and going to count the four titles.
Hold on.
That is not fair.
Hold it.
That's not fair.
Come on. If you can bring up Russell, Havlicek, Kuzi, and those guys, I can not only bring up Mike into them, I can bring up Magic, Kareem, Worthy, Kobe, Shaq,
I'll give you that.
Byron Scott, everybody.
But they got 13 without Mike, and they played in Minneapolis, not Los Angeles.
Excuse me. The bottom line is the Los Angeles Lakers have as many titles as the Boston Celtics. How do you get to put the Boston Celtics in the top five and the Lakers are nowhere in the top five?
They only
How?
Have 13 in L.A.,
All right.
17 in Boston.
Only 13?
That's not 17. All right, we have a hard out on being cold. Whatever, Stephen A., you know I'm right.
I don't.
Good job by you.
Yeah.